Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The Brain Massage Show radiates the mind with truth, releasing thought antibodies that attack and destroy lies. Stay tuned. The Brain Masseur is ready to massage your brain.
Hello, my dear friends. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your Brain Masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here. Flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Eric Holder has resigned. Now, he will not be prosecuted for his crimes against the Constitution. Although he refuses to enforce laws he deems unconstitutional, he even refuses to prosecute offenders of laws that he does regard as constitutional based on the color and or political orientation of the offender, which works perfectly in step and in concert with Obama's program and his agenda. Nevertheless, Obama apparently has asked Holder to resign in order to provide cover for Dems in the upcoming election, you think? Or perhaps in preparation to further delay recent court orders that require Holder finally to turn over fast and furious documents Holder has been, holding. And Obama, by the way, will not be prosecuted for his many crimes against the Constitution. He refuses to enforce laws he deems unconstitutional, commits flagrant offenses against the Constitution, does not even have the courtesy to follow the standard protocols for saluting. But really, he rudely holds his latte in his saluting hand while performing the formal gesture in a manner disrespectful to the Marines who protect him. But of course, that's just insulting, except that it is sort of symbolic of his casual regard for the Constitution, that our Marines, Army, Navy, Air Force, and National Guard lay their lives on the line daily to protect. But Dinesh, now that's another matter. He was sentenced to community service and 5 years of probation for violating a campaign law that is... unconstitutional. Violation of First Amendment rights. I agree with Dinesh. The sentence was justified. He should not have done it. He was right to express his regret and shame for doing something he called stupid. He gave the campaign contribution limit of $10,000 to his friend Wendy Long in her 2012 Senate run. Then he recruited some others to funnel another $20,000 into her campaign, and that's a no-no. It's a no-no, even though it was not to curry political favors from his friend, but to help her. It is against the law. And just like the illegals crossing our border is contrary to our laws, and that should be stopped, likewise these laws should be enforced. Obama and Holder refused to enforce the border crossing laws, but now this one is high on their list to enforce. That is, if it's a conservative doing it. This is something done often, and it's against the law. Donkeys do it. Elephants do it. And you know what I mean. Usually it's punished by a fine. But when it involves millions and repeated offenses like Jeffrey Thompson and Saint Singh Chatwal, who illegally funneled millions into Democratic coffers, they get fined. And, in Thompson's case, he got 6 months of prison time. When donkeys or elephants do it at this level, however, when it's under $50,000 and it's not a repeated offense and there's no intent to corrupt, it's usually a fine and some probation. Happily, that's what Dinesh got. Holder and company were going for 16 months of prison time. 16 months of prison, minimum 10. Jeffrey Thompson, who illegally funneled millions into Democratic campaigns, got 6 months and a plea deal. No one with sense doubts it. Dinesh was a political target. And by the way, the guy leading the charge against Dinesh, DOJ employee Brett Barara, and he's an Obama appointee who, surprise, surprise, is now first in line to get the appointment to replace Holder. When will Lois Lerner be arrested and convicted of her crimes? Conspiring with the White House to use the IRS to attack Obama's political enemies? Obama's administration makes Nixon and his Watergate look like a schoolyard prank. Obama employs the IRS and the DOJ to attack and persecute his political opponents. Rolling your eyes yet? you might not believe Lois Lerner's 35 visits to the White House and emails, what few have been found, where she, in thinly veiled language, discusses going after Obama's political opponents in order to shut them down, is an example of Obama using the IRS to attack his political opponents. And you might not believe that the government, going all out to put Dinesh away for 16 months for $20,000 in illegal contributions, one time to a friend with no intention of corruption, and while they gave Thompson 6 months and a plea deal for millions in many illegal donations over a period of some years to various Democrats, specifically to curry political favors for his business. And if you don't think that's an example of using the DOJ to attack his political enemies, well, I don't know what to tell you. Go ahead and roll your eyes, but from everything I've seen from this president, his peevishness, his pettiness, his racial bias-driven presidency, his past record of using dirty tricks to disqualify opposing candidates in a political race, his lies about his birth certificate and hiding his education records and passport, and all of this is right in front of our faces, and yet some continue to stick their heads in the sand like a silly ostrich and refuse to see what is in front of them. I don't know how you do that eye-rolling thing with your head in the sand, but anyway, I'm convinced that a man should be judged by the content of his character, and that a man's character is displayed by what he does, while his heart is revealed by what he says, and when what he says and what he does contradict, it reveals the heart of a liar. And when I add up Obama's statements together with his actions, it all adds up to me, using traditional math, you know, like 2 + 2 = 4. Obama's words plus his deeds equal a liar. I don't trust liars. When Obama stood before the UN and suggested that Ferguson is an American example of the racial hatred that he said is behind so much terrorism in the rest of the world today, he effectively likened what happened in Ferguson to what is going on in Syria and Iraq. He was talking about the threat of terrorism. He was offering his explanation of the roots of terrorism. And in that context, he offered that terrorism is rooted in racial bias and hatred, and suggested Ferguson is an example of that sort of racial bias and hatred in America. Well, many objected, as may be expected. They said what happened in Ferguson was not a race-motivated killing of a black man by a white man. Indeed, it was a police officer defending himself from the assault of a thief resisting arrest. It had nothing to do with white and black. It had to do with, wait a minute, look again. It was about white and black. Let's face it. It was about black racism against the white officer. It was about black racism against whites. And here's a point I'm making with this. It was about vengeance. It had nothing to do with justice. And everything to do with vengeance. Okay, and I'm beginning to move toward the brain massage burst of insight that you listen to the show for. Under Holder, the DOJ has been retasked from a Department of Justice to a DOV, or Department of Vengeance. The underlying motivation driving Holder's vengeance against whites for past abuses against the blacks. The Black Panthers who intimidated white voters in Philly some years back were not prosecuted aggressively for their crimes because, as Holder implied in some of his statements, the reason these blacks were behaving in this way was related to the past when whites intimidated blacks at the polls. Obama, and more recently Holder, runs out in front of whatever microphones they can find to make statements whenever someone makes an altercation between white and black out to be a racist thing, when it had nothing to do with race. But Obama and Holder make it all about race. And in statements they make, you hear them say things like they have understanding for the basis of this angst is in past racial abuses by whites. And I guess we're supposed to go, oh, okay, and just accept it? Listen up. You see, friends, it's one thing to recognize these offenses did occur. It's something else, however, to use that as an excuse to repeat abuses in the reverse. Don't you see, that's about vengeance, not justice. Holder ran out to Ferguson to side with the blacks, crying for justice. But justice is not what was being called for in the Ferguson riots. What was being called for was vengeance. Justice would be an even application of the law. Something, of course, we all agree with, but Holder and company, and Obama and the rest, are interested in payback, retribution, vengeance, not justice. They want to even the score, and that's not justice. Whenever someone is after vengeance, their sense of justice becomes perverse, and literally, they destroy justice. I believe Michael Brown's family has confused vengeance with justice, and I believe very many follow in that same mistake. They are angry that their child, or that this black man, was shot by the officer, and they want that officer to pay. The blacks, so many of them, that gathered in Ferguson to riot, justified their behavior by appealing to past abuses from whites against blacks. Now, if they're attacking white people because of something whites did to them years ago, or even if they are attacking white people for crimes or offenses committed against them by other whites, friend, that is not justice. That is vengeance. And it is exactly the sort of thing vengeance does when left in the hands of men. It perverts justice. Only God can handle vengeance. That's why he declares it belongs exclusively to him. Bible thumb alert, Bible thumb alert. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, in Romans chapter 12. If it was justice they were interested in, then the facts of the case would be important to them. Facts like Michael Brown attacked the officer. like he resisted arrest, like he failed to obey a direct order, like he was charging the officer at the time he got shot. All of these things would be important if justice is what we were looking for. But when vengeance is all we're looking for, nothing else matters except getting satisfaction for our anger. And then you compound that by an interest in personal gain, gaining power over perceived enemies, using a personal grievance to advance a personal, ideological, and/or political agenda. Being angry about past abuses of whites against blacks fuels that rage, which causes them to use a case like this one as an excuse to seek vengeance under the color of justice. In that way, Ferguson and what is going on in Iraq and Syria is similar. ISIS is racially motivated, ideologically motivated, and they use grievances that they hold against their enemies, oftentimes trumped up, exaggerated, made into something they were not, to justify their vengeance. It's people like Obama and Holder et al. Who are like the ISIS group. Vengeance always perverts justice. And folks, until we understand this about Obama and Holder et al., we are not going to get a handle on this situation. They justify abusing the Constitution. They justify selective prosecution. They justify trampling on our laws. They do it with grievances they hold against whites from past racial abuses. You know, and by grievances they hold against the so-called rich. By grievances they hold against the political right, which are trumped up, sometimes invented out of whole cloth, like we want to starve old people and stuff like that. And these grievances, they stir them up to stoke the desire for vengeance in the hearts of those who follow them, and this perverts justice. Anyone centered on the principle of vengeance cannot execute true justice. They will pervert it in almost everything they do, even in areas not related to their pet grievances. Let's look at Holder's record, all right? In our farewell. First, Operation Fast and Furious, probably the most reckless law enforcement operation ever carried out by the Justice Department, according to this article that I received. This gun-running scandal led directly to the death of an American border agent and many Mexican citizens. Holder was held in contempt because of his refusal to turn over information and documentation about this operation gone wrong that he basically claimed he knew nothing about, end quote. A court recently ordered the DOJ to quit obfuscating and delaying and to deliver the records on Fast and Furious in spite of Obama's use of executive privilege to protect Holder. And suddenly, Holder's on his way out? And now quote number two, Holder has waged a war on election integrity and racialized and radicalized the civil rights division to the point of corruption, end quote. According to one justice employee, embedding, quote, politically leftist extremists in the career ranks who have an agenda that does not comport with equal protection or the rule of law, who believe that the ends justify the means, and who behave unprofessionally and unethically, end quote. And that from somebody inside the Justice Department. And then quote number three, failure to conduct a real criminal investigation of the IRS targeting of conservative organizations, and to enforce the contempt citation issued by the House of Representatives against Lois Lerner. And this article continues, number four, reinstituting the Clinton-era model for handling terrorists that endangers the national security and safety of the American people, and going after journalists in leak investigations while ignoring the leaks coming out of the White House from high-level administration officials. And then number five, quote, failing to advise President Obama against taking actions that violate the Constitution and federal law, refusing to enforce or defend federal laws, and trying to persuade state attorneys general to engage in the same type of behavior of refusing to defend laws passed by their state legislators. And it continues, quote number six, engaging in collusive, sue-and-settle lawsuits with advocacy organizations and political allies of the president in order to implement regulations and new requirements without public notice or participation in order to use taxpayer money to fund the budgets of liberal groups. And then the seventh, quote, treated Congress with contempt and did everything he could to evade its oversight responsibilities by misleading, misinforming, and ignoring members of Congress and its committee, end quote. So you see what I mean? Holder's and Obama's so-called crusade for justice has been perverted by an underlying motivation for vengeance. They confuse vengeance with justice. They want vengeance disguised as justice, and in that way, they are very much like the enemy we are fighting in Iraq and Syria right now. Bible thump alert. Bible thump alert. The prophet Isaiah declared our sins have separated God from us, and the result of turning our face away from God and making foolish declarations such as America is no longer a Christian nation, and telling first graders, Jesus can't come to school, and then telling our children they can't pray, and at the same time promoting wickedness while ridiculing the innocent and righteous, subordinating man's needs to nature and justifying lies by false science like this Measure P nonsense. You should certainly vote no on that one. Well, the result is Isaiah 59 verse 9, therefore is judgment far from us, neither doth justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold, obscurity. for brightness, but we walk in darkness. And then verse 14 of the same chapter, and judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off. For truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Now think about that, my friends. And hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
Pastor Scheidbach is Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lanterns in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Keep the lights burning. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make a donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. As you know, I do prophecy conferences, but my approach is very different from the stereotypical prophecy sensationalist who comes up with a new date for the coming of the Lord every 10 years or so. To sell a lot of books and stir everyone up, actually, I give considerable attention to exposing those hucksters and helping people understand what the Bible actually says about how events will unfold as we approach the end of this world. Daniel's prophecies inform us that as we approach the end game, specific things will occur in Iraq, Iran, Russia, the residue of the four divisions of Alexander's kingdom, Greece, and the Western powers. From Isaiah and Micah, we learn about the fact that a sort of peace in the Middle East will come that will allow Israel to be at relative peace with her Arab neighbors and be replenished from a revived Babylon, which will be the economic center of world commerce, and that Rome will control this golden cup, hold it in her hand, and finally ride upon the governments of the world with the reins in her hands, making them drunk with the wine of her fornication. And that in the midst of all this, the American ideal of freedom of religion will prevail, at least for a while, before widespread persecution will overspread the earth. So I'm interested in the developments in Iraq as it struggles to stand upon its feet and goes through the transformation process of joining the more humane societies of the free world. And that is represented in Daniel 7 by the lion with the wings of the eagle, shedding its wings, standing on its own 2 feet, being given the heart of a man. And that represents Iraq or Babylon. Then there is the bear. This represents Iran and Russia and possibly China. But there's something else about China we'll look at in a moment. The kings of the East and so forth. You know, anyway, we see Russia rising and connecting with Iran and China. So I've been watching news regarding Russia with interest. And I received this interesting tidbit from the Moscow Times recently. Quote, a Russian general has called for Russia to revamp its military doctrine, last updated in 2010, to clearly identify the U.S. and its NATO allies as Moscow's enemy, number one, and spell out the conditions under which Russia would launch a preemptive nuclear strike against the 28-member military alliance. In my view, said General Yuri Yakubov, our primary enemy is the United States and the North Atlantic bloc. The 2010 doctrine defines NATO expansion as a threat to Russian national security and reaffirms its right to use nuclear weapons in a defensive posture. But according to this article, stops short of declaring NATO as Moscow's primary adversary and laying preemptive nuclear strike scenarios on the table, a posture unmistakably reminiscent of the Cold War. The general said the information war being waged over the crisis in Ukraine, where the West accuses Russia of arming separatists fighting the government in Kiev, and NATO's announcement that it would establish a permanent military presence in Eastern Europe have validated earlier fears that the alliance's claims of non-aggression toward Russia were insincere. The general added, in addition, it is necessary to hash out the conditions under which Russia could carry out a preemptive strike with the Russian strategic rocket forces, he said. Now, add to this another interesting article. Quote, Russian strategic nuclear bombers carried out air defense zone incursions near Alaska and across northern Europe this week in the latest nuclear saber rattling by Moscow. 6 Russian aircraft, including 2 Bear H nuclear bombers. The bear is rising. 2 MiG-31 fighter jets and 2 IL-78s, refueling tankers, were intercepted by F-22 fighters on Wednesday west and north of Alaska in air defense identification zone, said Navy Captain Jeff A. Davis, a spokesman for the U.S. Northern Command and North America Aerospace Defense Command. 2 other bears were intercepted by Canadian jets on Thursday. End quote. Additionally, we're becoming increasingly concerned about Russia's recent aggressive nuclear arms buildup, some of which is in direct violation of the old INF treaty, and that's the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. So I guess Hillary finally is getting what she called for, a reset with Russia. Only, I don't think she had in mind a return to the Cold War, or did she? But that's what Obama has brought us. He was going to make all the world love us, but right now 81% of the Russians distrust Obama and disapprove of his policies toward Russia, while 83% of Russians support Putin's actions. I've visited Russia 9 times, Ukraine, I think, 2 times, maybe 3 times. It's sad to see this develop. A friend, David Baskett, travels in Russia very often and has many contacts at some pretty high levels in that country. And I asked him about this, and he sent to me a document that is quite troubling, really. The name of the author is not given. The author signs off as, quote, a cold warrior, end quote. So I assume he's an older Russian whose perspective is shaped by that era. However, with 81% of Russians opposing Obama and 83% supporting Putin, this could be a younger person declaring a return to the Cold War status. In his opinion, it's titled A View from Moscow. What would you do and what would you think? After outlining what this Russian perceives is the threat to Russia's security, he lays out his complaints against America. Now, you'd have to read the open letter for yourself, and I just don't have time to do it here, but the gist of it is confusion and disillusionment. The Russian is confused about America's seeming paradoxical behavior. We are friends with Japan, who attacked us in World War II, but unfriendly toward Russia, who was our ally. I mean, that's the gist of the letter. Having high hopes for a, quote, pragmatic partnership, end quote, with America, who we admired, end quote. He goes on to list several things Russia did as overtures of friendliness toward America. And he named dissolving the WTO, that's the, what was that, the Warsaw Treaty Organization. They broke up the Soviet Union or allowed it to break up. They removed thousands of nuclear warheads and converted them to fuel for use in making electricity in the United States. I'm not sure what that's talking about. Anyway, they opened their military bases to us, even turning over bases they had in Afghanistan for our use and our conflict with that country. And this they did even though, when Russia was at war with Afghanistan, America supplied the other side so that Russians were being killed with American arms. They, that is Russia, built a monument to the 3,000 killed in 9/11 by Saudis. But, he mentions, no such monument has been built in America for Russians killed by Muslim terrorists. And he goes on like this for some 5 or 6 more paragraphs. He expresses his disillusionment. Expecting to be friends with America, Russians feel like they have been betrayed, taken advantage of, or used. Our immigration policies, for example, are viewed by him as arbitrary and too costly. Our attitude toward them taking actions aimed at securing reasonable security for their country seems, to their mind, in their mind, disingenuous. And to many Russians, their overtures of friendliness to us were unrequited. He concludes by saying the end result is now NATO is on our doorsteps and threatening us. As for Ukraine, he only says, quote, we depend upon the Ukraine to supply us with strategic items necessary for our defense, end quote. And he is insulted that American officials keep suggesting in Kiev that Ukraine become a NATO member when Kiev used to be the capital of Russia. For some reason, that seems to be somewhat insulting to him. When he asks, quote, what would you think and what would you do, end quote, and he signs off as written by a cold warrior, I already know what to say or better, perhaps where to begin. I mean, every bit of this can be answered. I mean, for example, when he says Russia delivered heavy rockets to California to boost our large payloads, well, I would answer, yeah, we bought those rockets from you. I guess we could have purchased them from somewhere else. But his idea is that we had friendly relations. We were willing to do business with you, but you didn't reciprocate. That's his thinking here. And ditto with so many of these other issues. It's a mess, folks. The bottom line is this. I'm sufficiently aware of Russian think to believe the line of reasoning reflected in this letter is very likely representative of the general population as it stands right now. Disillusioned at what they consider to be America's bad treatment of Russia and disappointment that they did not receive the support and encouragement they were looking for from our government. That's multi-layered as it always is. However, the Russian general, and this is the point, who is advocating that Russia rethink its military policies regarding use of nuclear weapons and a preemptive strike against Russia's enemies, and his call for Russia to identify NATO and America as Russia's enemy number one, might, in the current climate, find considerable support from the general public. And that is scary. Obama has so thoroughly messed up foreign affairs, it's almost impossible to explain how totally messed up this is. I mean, in his effort to make nice with the people who hate us, he has only encouraged them to despise us more and to take advantage of our perceived weakness to press their agendas. And he's pretty well pushed Russia into the arms of China. This so-called coalition he formed is nothing like what the Bush presidencies formed against Iraq and Afghanistan. And I've got to conclude, but regarding China, prophetically, most see China indicated in the prophecy regarding the horde from the east that will come down across the Euphrates and into the Valley of Armageddon for that great and well-known end-time war. The problem with this is that it refers to the kings, plural, of the East, and specifically mentions all the various nations of the East coming together, and all the armies of the world coming together. And of course, we expect that would include China. But God might have another role for China to play meanwhile. If America does not repent, and the trends continue as they are in China, their current trajectory could take them to a place where they might receive the gospel. It's a possibility, although it stands out there somewhat remote. Interesting things are taking place there. If Fiji does not become the next holder of the kingdom, perhaps China will finally open their doors to the gospel and receive the kingdom. Recently, an article in the People's Daily attempted to put a spin on what Chinese call the 3 years of hardship. That's a three-year period when communism under Mao Zedong was in full force, confiscating personal property, forcing the people into communal living, community kitchens, stuff like that, and so on. And that was answered from heaven by a terrible drought. And that three-year period, 30 million to 45 million Chinese people died of starvation or under the scourge of bloody communist policies in Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward, which, of course, turned out to be a disastrous fall into the abyss. But this propaganda piece attempted to accuse the West of exaggerating the devastation of Mao's Great Leap Forward into full-blown communism as an exploratory error, quote-unquote, exploratory error. Wow. Several in China are up in arms about this dismissive language used for what the common people there experienced as a horrendous and devastating blight in their history. One researcher at the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences wrote, quote, to rub salt in the wounds of the common people is intolerable, unquote. An economics columnist wrote, quote, those who called the Great Leap Forward an exploratory error should be sent back to the 1950s. Quote, China should starve them, freeze them, force them to constantly study revolutionary materials, make their inner soul explode with revolution, and let everyone watch, end quote. And she finished, quote, let them get what they're asking for, end quote. Oh, wow. All right, I've got to close. You know, thinking about that horde coming down and crossing Euphrates and moving into Armageddon, you ever read about the creatures that they're riding on, the horses? They're very bizarre. And I want to conclude with this. They are described as horses with the head of a lion and the tail of a serpent. They have breastplates of fire, jacinth, which is the deep blue stone, and brimstone and fire, smoke and brimstone, spews from the mouth of these creatures, and a serpent-like tail bites and hurts their enemies. Wow! Have you seen the new robots they are making for the military? Whoa, it's creepy. These things walk on all fours and are capable of maintaining their balance when pushed, and when going downhill or along a hill sideways even, or even when encountering ice, they can maintain their balance and recover. They look creepy. Look like monsters. It's totally easy to imagine something like this being manufactured to look like a horse with a lion-like head, glowing breasts from the fire and brimstone in its belly that it spews from its mouth and all that. Whoa! Of course, it's also possible through genetic engineering they'll come up with a biological creature like this, or a combination of machine and living creature, a sort of bio-machine. I mean, it's all coming together, folks. More on the role of Russia in the end time prophecy this Sunday night, 6 p.m., be there or be square, as they say. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know that you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you see the lights are on, and you will ride like a reverend and spread the warning. Essentially, it means you agree with what I'm saying, or call and say lights off if you disagree with me. And that means reject what I'm saying. Call 1-888-770-8000, or go to our website at theraymasashow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And you'll find on the right side there a place where you can indicate your email address and lights on or lights off, and then write me a note. And I love hearing from my audience, so please call or write. If you're in a hurry when you call, just say lights on, hang up, or lights off and hang up. But if you will, leave a message. I'd love to hear what you think of the show, positive or negative. Either way, God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church. My dear friends, I want to invite you to sign up right now to reserve your seats for the third annual Lights On Banquet. That's November the 14th. It begins at 6:30 p.m. and we'll have a wonderful meal for you and a wonderful time as we always do, plus some other surprises, and I'm looking forward to seeing you November the 14th for our third annual Lights On Banquet. So all brain massage aficionados, please come and join me for a nice meal and a great time with a live performance of a brain massage show, and learn what's going on with our brain massage show. You can call 888-770-8000 and leave your name and number so one of my staff can get back to you to arrange your reservations. I look forward to seeing you there.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com.